My guest today is someone whose personal story I think you'll find very inspiring, as well as the pointers she gives you in how to deal with medical crises. Her name is Donna Pinto, and you can see more about her at her blog, dcis411.com. I'll give you that and her other website a few times, so we'll make sure it's both there, and also it's also on the website. She's the founder of a site called Give Wellness, and it was created to ensure that all people facing serious life and health challenges could have access to wellness products and services that would otherwise be unavailable or unaffordable to them. In 2010, she received a terrifying diagnosis, and I'll let her tell you more about that herself, and she then had to deal with this diagnosis and the agonizing choice of what to do about it. That diagnosis actually turned out to be a transformative event in her life. She went from being frightened, confused, and anxious to feeling empowered, inspired, and able to take further action. She became an avid researcher, blogger. She got her certificate of nutritionist. And she became a health coach, and she became an advocate for informed decision-making and proactive wellness for women and anyone facing a serious diagnosis. Donna, I am so happy to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Dawson. It is such an honor to be talking with you and talking with your listeners out there. It's just, like you said, a labor of love for me as well to try to help other people that might be faced with something as shocking and scary as cancer, which is what was presented to me at a very young age. I was 44 and perfectly healthy, so it kind of blindsided me. I thought, someone like me would be the last person. I was pretty healthy and fit. When I got this diagnosis, it was told to me as ductal carcinoma in situ, which is called DCIS, and it's known as stage zero breast cancer. So I'd never heard of this before. And the shocking part of it was really when I was told this, they then said the treatment options were a mastectomy or a partial mastectomy and 7 weeks of daily radiation. And that's where I just completely went into shock and disbelief that something that's like a precancerous condition could have such drastic treatment by the medical community. It just intuitively, it didn't feel right. I knew something wasn't right about this. And I went home that evening, and I put out an email to all my friends and family, and I just said, this is the good news and the bad news. The good news is, you know, stage zero. It's what everybody wants, early detection. You know, my life will be saved. And the bad news was that the treatment of this earliest precancerous stage, it wasn't even cancer yet, it was as a prevention, was to potentially remove my breast or keep, you know, remove part of it and then have 7 weeks of radiation. And I just thought, those treatments felt way more invasive and harmful than what this possible cells were in my breast. So luckily I had a friend who I didn't know at the time that she was an energy healer. I didn't know what energy healing was. I wasn't looking for alternatives, but when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So I believe that. And
yes.
And my teacher appeared, and she just said, very adamantly, no, 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 this is nothing, this is not cancer, you're going to come over to my house, I'm going to help you through this, you're going to put off your MRI, in a month there's going to be nothing there. And she really counseled me on the fear and the anxiety and coached me and talked to me, and it just made all the difference, because it was just, I was really going out of my mind with what to do about this, knowing that my grandmother had died at age 50. I was now 44, and she was diagnosed at 48, died at age 50 of breast cancer. And my best friend from college had died 9 months earlier from cervical cancer with children the same ages as mine. So there was a lot of fear just going through me. And thankfully, within a few weeks with the counseling of my friend, and then we did a whole detox and nutrition, and I thought I was already pretty healthy, so just doing what I said, I'll do whatever you say. I mean, I just did not, I was highly motivated. I did not want to have any of those treatments. I knew that my brain never, ever even registered that I would do it. So I was a really good student. I was very, very eager, did everything she said, and a month later that MRI showed nothing. So it was very, very easy for me to make a decision to not have any further treatment at that point.
And now, just to back up a few steps, okay, so you've sort of a stage zero. For those who don't know what those stages of cancer are, just briefly recap what that is through stage four.
Right, so stage zero is considered a precancerous, non-invasive condition where there's some abnormal cells that are found. Now, there's an uncertainty in the medical community about which cells will go on to become invasive cancer. So what they've determined now is that 80% of these DCIS cells will not do anything. They'll just kind of stay put, and you're going to live your whole life with it. Similar to what's happening in prostate cancer. So stage one would be a small invasive cancer where there's actually invasive cancer cells. And stage two and three gets to be larger, and then stage four is where it's metastatic, where it travels through the lymph and bloodstream and going to other organs. And the stage four is really what is the kind of cancer that everybody thinks is, you know, the dangerous, can kill you, that people die from. So we're talking about two totally different things, and yet the treatment is relatively the same. As someone that's getting, you know, a stage three cancer diagnosis as a stage zero. So logically, I'm a pretty logical person. It just, you know, didn't make sense. And once I started doing some research, I quickly found some really top medical doctors also saying we're overdiagnosing and overtreating this. And so what they were saying really resonated with me. And it's the fact that I was doing so much research and had the time that I felt like I really needed to share this with other women out there that maybe weren't having the benefit of the time and the research. Because when you get a diagnosis, even at stage zero, they rush you through. And, you know, within a month, you have a breast removed or, you know, you've got all the treatments already done. So there can be a terrible, terrible regret that women go through not knowing the information. So I think it's so important for women to at least have all the information, and then if that they still feel like they can't sleep at night not knowing, because there is an uncertainty. I mean, nobody knows, you know, if they're going to have cancer or what's going to happen. So you have to be able to live with a certain level of risk and uncertainty. And I found out as much information as I could about my particular situation and felt really, really grateful and happy that I did not do those invasive treatments. And it's been 7 years now, and I'm, you know, monitoring through MRI every year, and everything has been fine. So I'm sort of, you know, pioneering a path that hasn't been studied. There are now some clinical trials underway, and I'm actually being a patient advocate on a couple of those trials, both in the United States and internationally, looking at not treating and just doing what they call active surveillance, meaning they're just watching it over time and maybe saving some people from this very, very aggressive, drastic treatment that is utilized sometimes in cases where women might die if not otherwise doing that treatment.
So people often just rush into the aggressive treatment, even at this very preliminary sign of the possibility of cancer-related cancer, without pausing to consider the alternatives?
Exactly. And we have a lot of celebrities, and the media just adds fuel to this rush ahead, and that it's breast cancer. I mean, there's a celebrity that just was diagnosed with DCIS, and she chose to have a double mastectomy. She was on Good Morning America and People magazine, and so she's, you know, really spreading the opposite message of, you know, don't wait, and this is a ticking time bomb, and really adding fuel to this fear. It's a cultural fear. The science is showing otherwise. And what I'm trying to do is really get the science and the research that the doctors and that are out there, but it's just not getting the same media attention and publicity. And so I'm writing all the time to different radio stations and TV stations and major news stations. But two of the doctors at the forefront of this movement to kind of slow things down, they were just named Time Magazine's most influential people in the world. This is a very hot topic, and I think today more people are hearing about DCIS than when I was diagnosed with it in 2010. So that's good. I think that awareness is important for anyone out there that's having a mammogram, which is also a lot of misinformation. And I think people need to be aware and informed of the harms, which don't come with it. It's somehow in the medical community we're being pushed forth with this testing and looking for cancers at such an early stage, but then you have this conundrum of what to do about something if you find something. And that creates a lot of mental anguish and a whole other host of problems. These women are really tormented. And that's where I try to help them. You know, I will talk to anyone and email someone back, you know, instantly, because I know that panic, that initial panic of, you know, what to do. I think I need to write an article about EFT in reducing stress. So,
yeah, I know that fear drives many people toward over-treatment, and it's on both sides of the consulting room, because doctors are afraid that if they don't over-treat people, if they don't use every possible treatment, they'll get sued for malpractice, and that's part of what's driving the epidemic of over-treatment. And then patients are concerned that if they don't do everything, every possible medical treatment, that they might get sick or get worse. And so there's this conspiracy of fear. But as we base our actions on fear, of course, not only are we often more likely to ignore the promptings of our rational mind and act irrationally, we also are less accessible to the promptings of our intuition, our inner knowing, and the wisdom of our bodies, which might have very different messages for us. And it sounds like you've been able to start to tune into that intuition and that rationality and not get swept up in the fear. So the fear may have been there for you initially, but it sounds like you're able to overcome the fear and then start to really take a good hard look at what the options were.
Yeah, well, actually my fear was more of the doctors and the treatments than anything that was going on in my body. And my friend, who was the healer and nutritionist, confirmed that. And then when I found the medical doctor talking about this even, it all kind of was like a puzzle putting it together. It just made sense that my intuition was right. My initial feeling was there's something, you know, really wrong about what's happening to, you know, 60,000 women a year. And a researcher in Dartmouth, Dr. Gilbert Welch, he wrote a paper talking about 1.3 million women over the last 30 years have been overdiagnosed. And with all those women overdiagnosed, that means they're all overtreated, because that is just what the standard of care is. So I've become really educated in the breast cancer world and seeing how the misinformation is presented and how people get swept up in, you know, the pink movement, and everybody wants to find a cure and find breast cancer early because they think that's the answer, but it's really far from the truth. So luckily we do have some wonderful scientists and researchers that are working on this dilemma, and it's even getting into the mainstream media now. So I'm very happy to see this shift and to be a part of the shift. I know that when I was looking for support for, I wouldn't even say alternative, I just felt like it was more natural and holistic and just looking at proactive ways to reduce my risk of ever getting breast cancer. You know, it's really like we have power within us to reduce toxins, and, you know, I wasn't aware of any of this, that it played a role in cancer development and just our thoughts and epigenetics and all these things that I've learned over the last 7 years have just been such a blessing. And so that's kind of why I wanted to pay it forward and make it available to everyone, even especially people that are underserved and don't, you know, have the money maybe to afford organic food or yoga or meditation or all these wonderful modalities that really play into keeping disease away and keeping us healthy.
Yeah, we'll talk about exactly what you did by way of those natural remedies to help support your own health. I know that there is now increasing evidence emerging from the world of epigenetics that those kinds of practices like yoga, meditation, and so on don't just have effects on the simpler systems of our bodies or the peripheral systems of our bodies. They have effects down to the level of our molecular biology. But in fact, EFT, we see them in two studies that EFT published showing that it's affecting the expression of many genes, including those responsible for breast cancer and prostate cancer and other cancers. And so it actually is helping our body with the factors, the genetic factors that recognize those cancers and then tell our bodies that these are foreign cells and need to be eliminated. So it's so interesting. And these other natural remedies, now we have the ability to do cheap and non-invasive genetic testing, are being shown to be powerful, powerful shifters of our internal genetic capacities, including our cancer-fighting abilities. So one thing I was curious about is you mentioned the proactive ways in which you addressed your diagnosis and your condition. Go ahead and share with us what some of those were.
Well, I was fortunate. I had been doing yoga for about 10 years at this point. I had a teacher who from India, and she's amazing. And so I had a practice already of deep relaxation and yoga and meditation and reading spiritual books. So I was blessed to be able to go into a place and have those tools and resources available. It wasn't new to me. So I really utilized a lot of yoga and the books that I had found helpful just had given me peace of mind. I just continued reading those along with a lot of books on nutrition. I became really kind of a connoisseur of immersing myself in everything about food as medicine, and read a stack of books on nutrition. That led to me becoming a certified nutritionist. I thought, well, why? You know, if I'm going to really help people, I should at least get that certification. So, I still continually read a lot about nutrition. I'm now working with a UCSD program on natural healing and cooking. So that's at the forefront. It's just food is medicine, and really shifted everything to organic produce, organic products, really eliminating toxins. I changed out pots and pans. I stopped using deodorant that had bad chemicals in it and shampoos, and really kind of revamped my whole life with just the products that I was using and breathing in, just trying to reduce any risk. If I had a little slightly higher risk than the average woman, well, I could bring that down. I also had the practice of exercise for, 30 years. I've been a runner, and I was already eating really pretty healthy. I just started eliminating more sugar. I eliminated caffeine, alcohol, and dairy. I had not eaten meat in many years. So it wasn't really that tremendous of a shift for me to take it to a whole other level as far as the proactive steps. And with stress reduction, I also just utilized more meditation and being out in nature, really connecting with nature. My friend Adriana had told me that everything in nature, is logical and sensical. And so it seems so overly simple, but it really did help and was one of the strategies. I watched a ton of videos and, I have all these resources that I've listed on. I have two websites that are just specific to DCIS, and one is DCIS 411, the other one is DCIS Redefined. And the second one I put together with another DCIS patient I had become friendly with online, and she experienced a lot of the same feelings that I did. And we wanted to have a place where we had all this research and science and studies and resources that women could go to. And we actually created something called a Proactive Breast Health Club, where we write periodical articles and, just on building the immune system and stimulating your lymph system, and, what to eat and what not to eat. So we've kind of got everything there, how to reduce stress. And, it's been just a joy to do this research, to sort of reaffirm what I knew to be true, and that we have the power within us, you know, and our thoughts really play a big role. And really eliminating the negativity and staying away from the news. And, you know, sure, you can get some news, but you don't have to be immersed in all the negativity in the world and watch it round the clock. So those are some of the things that I...
Yes. I know you've been immersing yourself in inputs other than negative news, and there's so much of it, it's hard to escape sometimes, and yet it's so worth doing, because if you orient yourself that way, then those thoughts fill your mind, and there is something that psychologists call the brain's negativity bias. We are far more attuned, our brains are far more attuned to paying attention to negative messages than positive ones. And of course, that has a very strong evolutionary basis, because it was vital for your distant ancestors to notice the tiger in the grass or the snake in the tree and avoid it. So there was a very big evolutionary premium on noticing the bad stuff, and there was very little evolutionary reward for noticing the positive stuff. And so if we miss the beautiful sunset or the sound of the brook tinkling as it flowed by, nothing bad happened. So our brains are so attuned to this, and it's very difficult to then, when we're trying to pick our sources of intellectual stimulation, choose the ones that are positive and ignore all of those negative ones. Any and all of those negative ones, if we let them percolate through our mind, are just filling our awareness, our consciousness, with all kinds of negative messages. So how did you insulate yourself from all of those negative messages?
Well, I just immersed myself in books and videos of all the other positive, and I didn't really tune into the news. And even with cancer, you know, it's all around us, and it's, you know, every day there's three or four different headlines. And it just, I just really saw, I could see through it just as I can today, that there's something over dramatic about it, and it's not really the truth. So I'm sort of like a investigative journalist and trying to peel back the layers and find out why is this being pushed so much, and why are they saying this, and you know, the slogan "Early Detection Saves Lives," it really kind of started to bother me when I discovered that a lot of the problem of what I was experiencing and thousands of women is due to mammography. So we have this tool that is being presented as this life-saving tool, and yet there are millions of women who are being harmed, and it's not even making the news, you know? And so I kind of felt outraged and thought they're diagnosing all these women, they're giving it to low-income women for free, and then they're just opening a can of worms that really is a nightmare. And I think that women at least deserve to know that there are harms, and there is this potential finding of these precancerous cells, and then what do you do about it? So I just feel very motivated and inspired to really hunt for the truth. I've always been a seeker, even with religion and, you know, just politics. I just kind of want to find out who's really pure and true and coming from just love and healing and nature. That's just what resonates with me. Maybe I was born with that blessing, but that's kind of what I gravitate towards. And I feel, you know, I kind of have that, the BS meter is even bigger now. I can sense it.
Yeah, in fact, many people, a diagnosis like that comes as a wake-up call, and they really start to pay attention to their well-being after that, whereas before they may have thought they were immortal and wouldn't need to deal with those kinds of illnesses. So it's interesting. When I was doing a book on cancer survivors many, many years ago, I was surprised by how many of them said that their diagnosis was their pivot point in their lives that shifted them into very different ways of thinking and being. And many of them had done really well with their lives after the diagnosis, and the diagnosis actually wound up, for many of them, being positive. So it's interesting how sometimes these are what my friend David Gruder calls awful gifts, and even though they seem dreadful at the time, we can revision them as being those wake-up calls stimulating us to change our lives for the better and to nurture and support ourselves. Don, I was curious about your thoughts on these large cancer organizations. As you know, cancer is an enormously lucrative industry in the Western world, and huge numbers of people, because they do follow those conventional treatments unquestioningly, spend enormous sums of money on them. So there's a whole infrastructure, both public, private, and nonprofit, for treating people, for raising money, for doing research, and so on. And many of these organizations have recently been exposed as having less than the most perfect practices. You share those on your blog. Go ahead and just talk a little bit about this problem.
Right. Well, you know, it's unfortunate that so many of us really want to see the end of breast cancer, and so we're kind of preyed upon with from the survivors to the family members to, you know, just even at the grocery store, to give money to support these efforts and charitable, you know, organizations that, you know, on the front seem to be doing a good thing, but when you, you know, do the research like I've done, to really find out where is all this billions of dollars going to, if what these, you know, experts are saying, that the same amount of women are still dying of breast cancer every year, 40,000 women. They're now finding all this, you know, stage zero breast cancer because of mammography over the last 30 years. So we've got a whole pool of a million plus women that have been diagnosed with this and treated for this as if they're cancer patients. Yet the same amount of women are still dying of cancer. There's no cure. My very good friend right now is dealing with metastatic cancer. And there really has not been much progress made. So that kind of leads to a little bit of frustration. And for me, I kind of wanted to just get more answers and started digging and doing the research. And what I found was really disheartening, that some of these major organizations are, you know, that a lot of the money is going to very big salaries, over $500,000 a year, and a lot of it's going to early detection and awareness and education around early detection. Well, there's been like 7 studies showing that mammography has not saved lives, and in fact, it's just creating more harm and more overdiagnosis, which is, you know, the case with DCIS. And even Switzerland, they're doing away with mammography. In the UK, they're, you know, waiting till later and doing it like only every 3 years. So here in this country now, even the American Cancer Society has changed to start mammography later. They finally agreed. So it's shifting slowly, but it's still ingrained. And even the medical community, I still get letters that I'm due for my mammogram, that, you know, women should start at age 40. I mean, they're just not listening to the science. So you have to wonder, why is that? So it's a big profit-driven industry, and mammography has a monopoly on this industry. And so it's kind of, you know, I see it almost as a recruitment tool, which, you know, takes away that life-saving, you know, image of the wonder of it. So it really, there's a real big disconnect in what's going on. And every October, you know, it's kind of, it's a little sickening to a lot of the women that are aware of this, that, you know, so much money, and even, you know, big organizations, the NFL, you know, everyone's wearing pink, and it's just become this big hoopla. But really, you know, where is the money going to? And, you know, we need to have better treatments. Even, you know, what I experienced just in stage zero and not going through with the treatments, it was just, I felt it was very antiquated and barbaric and horrific that this is what women are going through still to this day. I'm shocked, and I'm happy that I'm no longer a part of that that kind of conveyor belt, and kind of, you know, forging my own way and finding the alternatives and just living at peace with it and not worrying and thinking, you know, when is it just that ticking time bomb going to go off? I just don't think that way. And if you do think that way, it's going to be very hard to live your life, and, you know, in a happy, healthy way, because your thoughts do manifest. Even you can eat the cleanest, greenest diet, and all that stress will just turn your whole body acidic. So I think stress can trump diet and exercise, and that's a critical factor here, because there's such a mental component with breast cancer especially, and that's kind of why, you know, I've really made this my labor of love, to help women understand they can make better choices.
Yes, And you though have to be a pretty strong person to forge ahead against that medical consensus. When you get the diagnosis, when you're given options in the hospital or the clinic, your doctor's probably not saying, gee, eat, as you put it, clean and green. Yoga can help. That the research shows that EFT has an epigenetic effect on cancer. Immerse yourself in positive media. Go and spend time in nature. People are not getting those kinds of prescriptions.
Yeah.
So it's hard when the only options that you're presented with are surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, to have the independence to do what you did.
Yeah, I even went to the Integrative Center at one of the centers in San Diego, and you know, I just said, why isn't anyone studying what I'm doing? You know, and he was very honest. He said, there's just no money in it. You know, it's not being funded in the way that it needs to be. Thankfully, now there are a couple of studies that are looking at what they call active surveillance, but they're still missing a huge point of the proactive, integrative risk reduction strategies that are so readily available. And for those that it's not available, that's why I created my nonprofit, to make it available to everyone, because everyone should have access to health and wellness and integrative strategies that are really preventative and are just, they just should be available to everyone. So it's just this huge disconnect in our medical model. And even, you know, all these big centers, medical centers, have integrative departments, and they're not talking to each other. They're, you know, when I first asked, when I got the diagnosis, I said, is there anything I can do with my diet? You know, should I give up coffee? And they said, no. There's nothing you can do, but, you know, would you like a prescription for Xanax? And I just thought, that's just wrong. There's something not right about this. And so I'm just very blessed that I had that wisdom internally and listened to it. And then I had, you know, the angels kind of appeared and continue to appear, both, you know, on the holistic side and the medical side, because there are wonderful medical doctors and scientists that are coming out and boldly stating, this is too much treatment and we need to step back.
Oh, man.
And one thing I'm curious about is, you said in the first segment, Donna, that when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and you very quickly found a friend, you found integrative doctors, you found all the people who needed to help you support your own health and well-being. And I'm wondering two questions, really. One is, how does a person who's got a diagnosis find them? And secondly, how do you differentiate the useful ones and the ones that are solid from those that are just quackery?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because there's a lot of information out there on the internet that that is dangerous, and even on Facebook and women giving each other advice. And that's why I try to have a lot of research-based information that is backed by studies. And I always recommend to people to work with a naturopathic doctor or a nutritionist or an integrative doctor. Everything is individual. You can't just, start taking bioidentical hormones. You need somebody to oversee your health and wellness that, you know, can measure certain tests. Now, I have found also on both sides, is, you know, there's a lot of people pushing supplements and different remedies, and, you know, you do have to be just discerning. And I try to find resources from maybe three people or authors that I feel in alignment with, because there's so much conflicting information, just like on something like soy or bioidentical hormones. I mean, you're going to, you ask 10 people, you'll get 10 different answers. So you have to also come to a place of what you resonate with. Again, it comes back to your, you know, intuition. And I've tried to put a lot of resources on my websites, the DCIS websites, that can give peace of mind and give direction and guidance and reassurance to women that are looking for, you know, if they're looking for doctors or second opinions or things that their doctor might not readily give them or know about, you know, that I think, you know, everybody should really know about. And the other thing is just, you know, don't rush. I mean, there's nothing that anyone needs to rush into, and especially with something like DCIS, it's slow growing. And a lot of breast cancers, and any cancer really, is so slow growing that it's been growing for 8 to 10 years. It's not something that happens overnight. So I think you have to come to a place of understanding how the body works and how the body heals and the mind. And it really is a gift to kind of take your health and wellness to a whole new level if that's something that it's what someone wants. I mean, it's been an amazing experience for me. I thought I was pretty happy and healthy before, but now it's like on another level.
So what's next for you? Where do you see yourself taking this in the future?
So right now I'm working on a couple of big clinical trials that it's sort of a blessing to have that voice in a major research setting. That's kind of new for me. And the other part of what I'm doing is my nonprofit called Give Wellness. GiveWellness.life is the website. And I just want to make health and wellness the rest of my life. I want to teach whoever is interested or eager, and I want to make it available to different groups and to underserved people and those that think, you know, I can't afford organic food or I don't have a blender. I just say, well, if there's a barrier, we can raise money and you know, fund it through a different way. I've had a background in nonprofit work, and so I know that there's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of, you know, companies that want to do corporate social responsibility, and in the areas of wellness and health and cancer prevention it's just a big thing. And so I know that my efforts are all going to be towards helping people, you know, find health and happiness through nutrition and lifestyle and stress reduction. This will be a forever thing.
Tell me more about those clinical trials you're involved with.
So one is called the COMET study, and it's going to be coming out soon. And it's going to be a 5-year study looking at women that are randomized to have what's called active surveillance rather than immediate standard of care surgery with or without radiation. And I think just taking that pause and that time out for a number of women, I think it's going to be about 900 to 1,000 women, that they're just going to watch and have imaging to see, because no one at this point in time, no scientist, no surgeon, pathologist, they don't know what this does. They don't know which ones become cancer. And their hypothesis from retrospective studies looking at over 100,000 women, that there was no difference in whatever treatment they did, that it didn't have any impact on their survival. So the notion that we're over-treating this, it's pretty agreed upon, but until you have what's called a randomized clinical trial looking at women in a study and following them along for 5 years, then they'll know, you know, one way or the other, what's going to happen. And I'm my own personal clinical study because I've been doing this for, you know, over 5 years, and every case is different. That's the problem, is that, you know, it's really coming down to individualized and personalized medicine, but it's just, you know, the expense of looking at each individual person and taking the time needed to evaluate, you know, what their diet is and their lifestyle, and that's going to come from patients to be their own advocates and take charge of their own health. It's never going to come from the medical field or from any study. So we will get some information from this, and the other study is an international study that it's not yet been funded, but it's all about preventing over-treatment. So to me, even just the fact that scientists and doctors are talking about this and writing grants for it, I'm just overjoyed. It's very affirming that it's, you know, it's like an injustice in women's health that I see really needing to be fixed. And I just have said I'm all in. I'm gonna help in any way I can. And, you know, share my story with as many people as I can.
I'm just chuckling at the whole idea of a study to look at preventing overtreatment. Published 2 years ago about cardiology, and they found that the patients, cardiac patients, had better outcomes when they were admitted to the hospital with heart attacks if cardiologists were on vacation and not there.
Wow.
I've been so delighted to share this information with you. Thank you so much for your huge heart and the way you're giving this information so freely and generously to everyone, Donna. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you so much, Dawson. It's such a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And again, Donna's website for her nonprofit is givewellness.life.